I would say all the commentators. Maybe someone here or there, but I don't believe. I haven't read all the commentaries that the people have read since 1,000 years. But I think I can presume safely, without being unjust to any commentator, that every commentator has portrayed Arjuna as a confused wreck because of the symptoms that are described when he was asked to fight. Have you, any of you, compared our commentary with other commentaries? Yes.
Does that mean have we read other commentaries?
Yes. Have you compared?
No.
With what commentary?
Radha Krishna.
Yes, yeah. With Radha Krishna. And what do you find?
Well, he said that Arjuna didn't have the moral strength to fight.
That's it.
It was all sentimentality, and it had no relationship to real compassion, and it's quite different.
All negative. Yes. He has been portrayed as a very, very negative personality, which had lost all its strength of heart and mind. Huh? And did you read our commentary?
Oh, yes.
And in that, what you find?
The highest of the relative, very close to the absolute.
Yes. Has this point been made very clear there?
Yes. Yes.
Huh? He was in suspense, not because of loss of mental or emotional strength, but because of the fullness of mental and fullness of emotional strength.
But that point especially I cannot understand.
Yes.
Because I feel that when the heart is fully developed and the mind is fully developed, both are going in the same direction.
Now, no more they are going. Having reached the highest level of their evolution, each are full. So no, they are not going. And because heart is full, and no more there is a chance of any further evolution or development. And mind is full, and no more there is any chance of mental development. So heart is full and mind is full. When both are full, then in the case of Arjuna, both became self-sufficient. They became so full that they were self-sufficient. Being self-sufficient, the link between them was lost. When the heart is leaning towards the mind and mind is leaning towards the heart, that means the heart needs some support from the mind needs some support from the heart. This is in the state of not complete development. That means on the way to development. But when both are full, both are complete, both are absolutely self-sufficient, then one doesn't lean on the other, one doesn't lean on the other. And the link between them is lost. When the link between them is lost, then the one couldn't convey to the other, one couldn't convey to the other. And this is a state where the desire cannot flow. And in that context, it has been discussed there that the desire flows either from the heart to the mind or mind to the heart somewhere. That means when the heart feels some lack of something, and the mind okays it. And then from the heart to the mind and on, through the senses, the desire goes. And when the mind feels the lack of something and heart okays it, then the desire flows. Now, in this case, Arjuna Arjuna's heart and mind both were full, and therefore the flow of the heart and the flow of the mind stopped. And when the flow of the heart stopped and the flow of the mind stopped, then he came on a state of suspension, a suspended state of consciousness. And a suspended state of consciousness, he can't think properly, because the mind is loose completely, not in a position to think, not in a position to feel, nothing. So he fell down and sat behind and was not able to, even his hands and his body will shiver and all sorts of things will happen. This state of Arjuna, described towards the end of this first chapter and also continued in the beginning of the chapter. It was a state of what? Indecision on every level. This state of indecision at every level was not due to his confusion, as the commentators have portrayed. The thing is, Lord Krishna, the representative of the Absolute, was not needed to give a lecture to the confused. Any sensible man would have done this kind of thing. Arjuna presented a state of life in highest development, yet that state, which should have presented an ideal structure of life, presented such immense problems that the symptom of life was lost. A state which should have presented an ideal state of life. In that state, even the symptoms where life were lost. That means, when the life was to be full, there was no life. Nil. Such immense problem, state of problem. We cannot imagine any greater problem than this, which presents the most ideal state of life on a level where we find no symptom of life. Full life and no life. A man is in a position of living full life, but he is not living 1% of life. A man who is in a position of living 100% of life, he can't even show 1% symptom of life. Such an immense problem. We cannot imagine a problem greater than this to any man at any time. Can we? To solve such an insoluble problem was needed someone who would really be transcendental, because life on the highest level, showing the symptom of life on the lowest level. Whole, the highest level, fullest development. Lowest level, no symptom of life. So the whole field of life, from the subtlest to the grossest, from the least manifested state of life to the most highly evolved life, from both levels. So someone who is beyond that and beyond that, he alone will be able to solve the problem. Is it clear? Only the transcendental had to speak. And only the transcendental could speak, because it alone would be able to handle, because it is it which lies on this side and that side of such a life which is completely paralyzed. Is it clear?
Maharishi, how do you see the place of the heart and also of the mind in the state of full consciousness?
The place doesn't change.
No, not the locality, but
the feeling. In the highest universal love, bliss consciousness, that's the presentation of a fully developed heart.
Yes.
And all righteous judgment and spontaneous right doing will spring from the mind. So all universal love, fullness of heart, and all right understanding of thought and action from the mind. And that was the state of Arjuna.
And then where do desires come into the picture? I mean, when you are fully evolved, what could be the desires?
Make everyone happy. Make everyone happy. Lay out a system of life whereby spontaneously anyone born on earth will be happy, will be enjoying bliss consciousness. Lay out a system. And this is what Lord Krishna did. To answer this state of life. That means, if such a state of problem could be solved, then that solution will contain in itself the solution to all problems of life. There is a problem, a proverb in Hindi which says that in the footprint of the elephant, all the footprints could be imbibed. It's so big. If such a problem of life could be solved, a problem bigger than which we can't just imagine, a life which should have displayed full 100% value is displaying no life, no symptom. And to solve this insoluble problem, someone of absolute status was needed. Someone of transcendental nature.
Even that problem could not be solved on the level of that
sattva. No sattva. Sattva guna. See? the problems of tamoguna. I believe by now you have all the conception of gunas, tamas and rajas and sattva. The problems of rajoguna are solved when the problem of tamoguna are solved when rajas dominates. And all problems of rajas will be solved when sattva dominates. And in pure sattva, life is free from problems. But in the state of Arjuna, he was held on that high level, but was fastened to an iceberg, which overtook life throughout, finished. Now what to do? A state of life which doesn't show any symptom of life can only be broken through by something of transcendental nature which is already permeating it, all pervading, in and out. That alone could bring life to the most evolved life in the state of lifelessness. So Krishna was needed. Krishna symbolizing absolute. He spoke. And what he spoke was, he never spoke about the details of the problems which Arjuna put in his his state of suspense. See, even in that state of suspense, what he was speaking was all truth, virtue, dharma. Dharma is all righteousness. True dharma. He placed before Lord Krishna the problems of dharma, to which Lord Krishna just did not answer, because there are no answers. Whatever he said was right. And yet he posed the questions on that level of all right understanding about life and its implications through all the different layers of existence. All was right. So what Lord Krishna said was, he said, get out of all this confusion. You are thinking about something for which the wise do not think. You are talking like a wise man, but pondering over something which does not deserve consideration by the wise. Saying that, he brushed off all his beautiful logic of all righteousness. He didn't. And then he started to tell him that there are two fields of life. One is ever-changing and one is never-changing. So why should you bother about the ever-changing, because it's all the change means death and death and death and death and death. Don't you be concerned about the field of death, it's already changing anyway. Be concerned with that which is non-changing, which is not changing. Like that, once he laid out the line to indicate that the transcendental absolute is there to be looked after, and that was his main theme of reviving Arjuna's interest in the world. This was only to revive his interest in the world again. And for that, he just laughed over this relative field of existence, because just this changing. Something, and there is something which is non-changing. The verses of the second chapter spoken by Lord Krishna are so beautiful. This is the first thing that he did. In one stroke, he just brushed his beautiful logic and all sense of righteousness and all that. Because that righteousness in which Arjuna's heart and mind and life was floating that had not proved to be worthy of any practical use even to Arjuna, because all that knowledge could not save him from being in suspension. He lost the sense of life, and all that beautiful knowledge of righteousness and all that, it could not uphold him from sinking into a state of suspension. And therefore, all that he knew had to be brushed off because he didn't know enough. He didn't know enough of life, and what was lacking in his knowledge was the wisdom of the Absolute. All wisdom of relativity he had, all wisdom of righteousness and virtue and all good things about the mind and all good feelings of the heart and everything, universal love and righteous understanding, everything he had already had, but that did not help him from sinking into a state of suspension. Therefore, all that he had to be laughed out and given a big jerk to his mind and heart. Because Arjuna was aware of his status. He knew how much he was devoted to righteousness, and he knew how much he was devoted to universal love. Because as a noted warrior of his age, his life was for all others, for all good, and to kill all the bad that was there on earth, and to save all the righteousness and all that. So he knew his status as a great, as a most highly developed man of heart and mind. So it was not necessary to tell him that you are this or this. Already he was standing on that. But because all that had not helped him to really be a practical man. Had it been, he wouldn't have fallen into that state of suspension. And had it been, he wouldn't have got into that state of fullness of heart and fullness of mind. This insight into this indicates to us that only relativity is not enough for life, even if it is most highly evolved. And therefore, the evolution, the highest evolution, even in the relative field, has to be with the blessing of the Absolute.
But Maharshi, could he have got to such a level without the inclusion of feeling?
Of course, he did. Right.
Complete
fullness of life. By living good and doing good to the people. As many people argue, I don't have to meditate because I am good and I all do all good to the people and that's all that. So, doing good and only relative development of the relative good, so even though it may be of the highest level, but it can hamper life. It can leave a man without real value of life. The value of life, of all good, lies in living the good, and when he can't live it, gets into a state of suspension, then that most highly evolved state of life in the relative field can leave a man without the symptoms of life. Most highly evolved. This is what many people say. If you are always in bliss consciousness, you won't do anything. This will happen in a state of contentment in the relative field. If in the relative field the man becomes contented, It may be that he ceases to, and not maybe, it will be, as in the case of Arjuna. It is sure to be. If his mind and heart are most highly evolved in the relative, without the touch of the Absolute, without the content of the Absolute, then on that highest level of the relative, because there is no more chance of evolution, the life has to stop. Because there is no more chance of evolution from there, it stops. And it just stops. The reason is that there is no more chance of evolution. The flow of life is because there is a chance of next more and next more and next more and next more. But when the evolution has come to this, then it comes to this, finished.
Maharishi, can a heart then be so full of devotion and love of something else that it doesn't ever by chance transcend? Through devotion?
It happened in case of Arjuna. Through devotion, it will have the revelation of God. And we don't know how much revelation of God Arjuna had, but sure enough, he was a very devoted soul. Naturally, a religious man like him, a righteous man like him, a good heart like him, has to be full of all righteousness. But sure enough, he did not have any idea about the Absolute Being, and this he was to be taught. He knew everything that could elevate a man to the highest state of evolution in the relative. And having come to that state through the relative means of development, and the relative means of development are good action, good feeling, good doing, helping others, and all good austerity and all kinds of these things. They are all the relative means of being good. All this Arjuna had. And through all these means of relative development, he had developed his life to the maximum. But what he did not have is the wisdom of the Absolute, the transcendental value of life.
Was he sort of 99% cosmic conscious, and he needed that last bit to make him transcend?
Cosmic consciousness is by virtue of the Absolute in the relative. Absolute, and so there was no question of the imbibing of the Absolute. Fine, and up to the finest, and that is it, no more into the transcendent.
Yes.
He had exhausted all the possibilities of the relative.
He had exhausted all the possibility of relative development. And therefore, this is the whole, see, such a wonderful teaching. Lord Krishna in 45th verse, he said, the entire creation and the whole world is of the three gunas. Vedas speak of the three gunas. That means all the Vedic performances of right and wrong, and this is, they can carry a man to the highest level of the three gunas. Highest level in the development in the field of the three gunas. And that's it. Vedas.
So this is when he said, be without the gunas.
Be without the three gunas. This is the wisdom of the Vedanta. Anta means end. The wisdom of life beyond the wisdom of the Vedas, and beyond the field of the three gunas. This is Vedanta. So, all the wisdom of the world all the wisdom of the world, can take a man to that highest level of evolution in the relative, having reached which a man can attain the state of Arjuna.
This includes the experience of the personal God.
This may include the experience of personal God, because Arjuna had performed all that great austerity which had pleased many, many gods, and he was blessed with the weapons, special weapons, special arrows, special type of arrows which he can throw, and then the arrow may return to him, and all kinds of things.
Guided missiles.
guided missiles, just like guided missiles, and like that. And then one doesn't have to go through all the big mechanism of manufacturing the missiles and all sorts of things. No.
Maharaj, I always thought that to know the personal God, there was some saying you had to know the smallest of smallest before you knew the biggest of biggest. I thought you had to know cosmic consciousness, know the absolute before you could go on to know your personal God.
This when we get to the transcendent, and then we get to the finer levels, and the heart increases and all,
yes,
sorts of, but through long years of austerity, one purifies oneself and like that.
He had never transcended, in other words.
No.
He had gone to the highest celestial, but never gone beyond.
Yes. We doubt whether highest celestial, because highest celestial is one with the absolute.
Quite a lot somewhere there.
And then he was blessed by gods with all those special weapons. And he was storing them all for the time and waiting for the time to use them. So this state of Arjuna presents to us the highest state which Einstein could imagine. Huh? Who could believe through his mathematics only what he found. And what he found was that everything in the world was relative. Anything has to have a reference with any other thing. Nothing is independent all by its own. This is theory of relativity. Just to establish this state of dependence, Einstein has to go through all those mathematics that he went through. And what he established was that everything was dependent on every other thing. This is a state of relativity. What the theory of the Absolute establishes is everything is independent of everything. Absolute independent. Absolute independence belongs to everything on the face of all the mathematically drawn reality of life, that everything is dependent on every other thing. When everything is dependent on every other thing in the whole of relativity, then nothing has its status, nothing has its own life. Highest evolved state in the relative field will have to depend on something other than that. That means there won't be any real significant life. It was this dependence that Arjuna needed to make him a living being. Dependence. Because he came to a state where he was most highly evolved, and being in such a state, he felt so fulfilled, and then in this state of fulfillment, he couldn't lean on anything else, but the very fact that he was in the relative, and he had no basis in the non-changing. So he had to change. He had to change, yet he felt so fulfilled. He by himself can't change here and there. And that is why he needed an element which could support him, give him real support, could give him life, make him living. And therefore, what Arjuna needed was Krishna. Speaking absolute was necessary to inject life in the most highly evolved state of relative existence. So life could be injected in him only from the transcendental area. Because whatever was manifest, whatever is manifest, it's all full, nothing can be done from any level. So from a level which is omnipresent, life could be infused in every bit of him.
Would a man beginning the experience of transcending from this level of the relative attain cosmic consciousness immediately?
Instantly. Because there was nothing. That's why Lord Krishna said to him, Pratyavayona Vidyate, there is no obstacle.
Right next to it.
Say it loudly.
If a man first experienced the transcendental from this level of relative development, would he attain cosmic consciousness immediately?
Wouldn't he almost be on the level of the Om then?
Yeah.
Right there.
Almost on the level. For a confused man, an ordinary psychoanalyst or psychiatrist wasn't enough. Lord Krishna was necessary to speak to. But nothing in their relative could help him, because he was on the highest level of a relative. Being on the highest level of relative, nothing of a lower level of a relative could possibly extend help to him. Say it again loudly. You're making some good point, but say it a bit loudly.
At the minute, people think they're transcending being, and they're not. And therefore, with time, I don't know, people are going to find out perhaps that they're not. Well, I don't know. The teaching might lose its,
from relative to relative.
Yes, they're transcending on the other levels of transcending.
And they are not yet transcending and getting to being. See? But they get to the being to some degree or the other.
Maharishi, is it possible for a person to be on the highest level of relativity and be contented?
Be what?
And be contented.
Like Arjuna. If there is no support from the Absolute, then one could get to a static level of life as Arjuna got into.
But he wasn't contented. He was not contented. Well, what I'm thinking of is approaching people who are extremely happy, contented, healthy, energetic, people who feel they are fulfilled in this life, and trying to present meditation to them, transcendental meditation. It's all right to approach people who are discontented for some reason or other, but I was thinking of just people who feel fulfilled, feel they've reached, they don't need more, I mean, they're willing to go on as they are, and yet these people have not experienced anything.
I think we have to write a book for such people. Mm-hmm. Tell them that their sense of contentment is only due to lack of knowledge for something more. They don't know that there is something like bliss consciousness or some such absolute. And lack of this knowledge makes them feel contented in whatever state they are.
Maharishi, when you tell them that, then they say, well, if I don't know it, isn't it better I don't know and I just stay content?
No.
You just think you're
happy. A poor man, if he does not know that he is poor and he can be rich, then better he knows that he is. Rather than don't know so that I don't feel miserable, but let him, he must feel miserable.
So in other words, we're to teach him to be miserable so then he'll have the
and then he'll give him a shock. And then he will wake up and say, ah, there is something better than this. A shock, a better shock.
Because this is an answer we do get from a lot of people, but my life is so marvelous, why do I need anything more?
Oh, then have you heard my answer to a lady in Honolulu?
No.
Oh, yes. It's good to know it. During the first travel, speaking in Honolulu I had to speak there 4 lectures. And probably in the 3rd lecture, a lady said, there was questions and answers after the lecture. And she said, I don't want anything what you have to offer to me. I said, beg your pardon, what is your question? Because she declared she doesn't want anything and yet she wanted to know what I can offer to her. She said, I have everything that I want and I don't feel that I need anything. Have you something to offer to me? I said, yes. If you are really fulfilled, then I have to offer to you the whole misery of the world. If you are fulfilled, that means you have known the technique of living happily. I would offer you an invitation to come out and tell to the people how to live happily as you are living. Because there is so much of misery in the world. Then she sat a little bit alert. And then I said, now let us analyze your state of contentment. I take for granted, because I won't doubt your judgment. You are absolutely contented and you have everything that you want. She said, yes, yes. And then I said, yes. I said, you have everything that you want. Would you like to move into a living room where you will get things just by desiring? Maybe you are your drawing room is fitted with everything you want, water, and you press a bell and the water comes and do something like that. Everything you can have. But then would you like to move to a house which will give you things at will? You don't have even to press a bell or call the boy to do anything that you would just desire would just come to you. Would you want to move to a room like that? He said, everyone would like to have such a room. Then I said, this shows the self-sufficiency. Your self-sufficiency is only due to lack of a better possibility. Whenever any better possibility presents itself, you are ready to adopt, accept it. That means you are not absolutely contented. And then she sat more alert. The conclusion was strange to her. If she would move on to a room other than what she is in now, then she is not really contented. Then the feeling of contentment and self-sufficiency that she had and she was enjoying was due to the lack of knowledge about a better possibility. She was the first to be initiated next morning. She was really intelligent and very fortunate, because when she saw it clear, yes, maybe there could be a better life than what I am leading, she immediately. So this sort of self-sufficiency is only due to lack of lack of knowledge of a better possibility.
Could the writer of the Gita perhaps have chosen the most difficult problem, the problem that includes all problems?
That's it.